This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex is the premier provider of managed and in-house servicing in the biddable media space. If you're looking for true transparency with paid social, PPC, or programmatic, or are a brand or agency looking into in-housing your team, connect with Uconex. Uconex.com and Tumi. Tumi provides luxury without limits. I've got the bag. I've got the backpack. Thank you, Charlie Cole. If you are a business traveler, there is nothing that lets you roll in style like Tumi. It's in the studio with me today. That's true. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are incredibly proud to make a contribution to No Kid Hungry in the name of each of our 2019 guests. Stop by NoKidHungry.org today to contribute and help kids to be kids, not be hungry. Mike, let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CMO Suite. We are calling this week Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll because the last time I was here, we had Legends Week. And now all of the guests that I got to handpick are all somewhat either in the music industry or in the cannabis space or in the radio industry or whatever it is. And so I'm super excited about my next guest. Her name is Jennifer Frommer. She is the SVP of Creative Content and Brand Partnerships at Columbia Records. Did I say the title right?
You got it.
I got it right. Jennifer, I have known you, I feel like maybe for 3 or 4 years now, or maybe close. Maybe it's been a couple years.
Nothing longer. Feels like forever.
You're funny. I don't actually remember. I think I may have first met you at an Ad Age event. You were speaking, I think, and that's maybe the first place that I met you. And then I seem to have gotten in some trouble with you maybe at another event because I'm a bit of a troublemaker at some of these marketing events because they can get a little staid and a little boring sometimes. And so I think I viewed you from afar like, oh, she's causing trouble over there as well. This is somebody I should hang out with a bit more. And now it seems like when you and I hang out together, we seem to spend less time actually learning at some of these events and in some ways finding more of the trouble along the way. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'd say that when we hang out at these events together, we look to find people that we can kind of make fun of and bring into our circle. And then they become our friend and we all make trouble together.
So
and a lot of laughs.
That is something that's hard to do in this space sometimes. It's changing so much. It's changing so fast. Everybody takes themselves way too seriously sometimes. Everybody wants to talk about every brand that they've ever worked with or everything that's so work-related. But sometimes you just have to stop and have some fun, right?
Yes. That's a bit, you know, it's interesting. One of the things I think that we wanted to get into a little bit, it like dovetails really nicely into this topic, which is when I first started out, I was such a little humble, good little student person. And I thought that I didn't understand how important relationships were and how important it is to have fun and enjoy who and what you're doing in your career and in your deals, really, right? So I think I didn't really understand that you want to be friends with the people that you're doing your greatest work with. And that's how you accomplish the best work is by having fun.
So when you think about it, sales in general, all of us are sellers, no matter what position you're in, whether you're having to sell to somebody internally your work or whether you're externally or out there talking to brands. But people still want to do business with brands and people they know, like, and trust. And I feel like I try to live that in my heart to some extent. And it certainly seems like every time I've seen you, or I've been out with you, or I see you speak somewhere, that seems to be kind of a mantra that you seem to follow to some extent as well.
100%. If I'm not having fun and I don't like the people I'm working with, I mean, I've even gotten to the point where if it's not pleasant, then there's always somebody else you can talk to.
Yeah. And so that's a great takeaway already. Jeez, we're only 2 minutes in and you're already giving good sound bites. If you're in the thick of something and you're with somebody that is either just taking themselves too seriously or you're not having fun, just move to the next group.
Agreed.
You'll find somebody.
There's always somebody else.
Or they'll find you. Or
it's called the bigger, better deal.
Or they'll
deal.
Wave you down with their hand, a bigger, better deal that's
BBD.
Over there. Did you grow up here in the city?
I sure did. I grew up in Rockaway in Queens.
And did you ever move or have you always lived here?
I lived in Miami for a couple of years.
I knew that. Okay.
Mm-hmm, yeah. After 9/11, we moved to Miami just to kind of get away. Lived there for a while. Was a little bit of a wild person while I was down there. So I came back to New York with my tail between my legs and got super serious about my career. And then I had lived in LA when I worked for Interscope for Jimmy Iovine. So I lived in LA for about 5 years and also ran back to New York with my tail between my legs.
So when you say that, when you say you came back to the city with your tail between your legs, don't you also feel like you needed that chance to be able to kind of get away to some extent to also remember maybe what you love about this city so much? This city's a crazy city. It's hard to live in sometimes, especially with that mantra of have fun and realize this. Everybody walks with, you know, when people say like, well, what's New York City like? I'm like, walk fast. That's just, everybody seems like they're always walking fast. So that time in Miami, maybe maybe you didn't come back with your tail between your legs. Maybe that's how you view it, but maybe it was your chance to be able to just fall back in love with the city to some extent.
Well, it was also a chance to, because in Miami, which is wonderful, and I still own a place there, and I go back all the time, it's just not as serious, right? It's like there's
it's another country.
Well, there's an expression that goes, the best thing about Miami is that it's so close to America. It's like one of these things they say down there, and it's an amazing place to go and hang out, but it's hard unless you're, I guess, like in hospitality or club world, which I did a little bit of work in the club world.
My club age is 39. I don't know if you know that, Jennifer. I'm 49, but my club age is 39. Am I right, Philip? High sign, he says yes.
39 club
That's
age.
That's right, club age.
Why don't you take it down a little bit more? I think you should go for 25.
I could barely even pass for 45 at this point. I think somebody told me the other day, oh, man, you look 52. I was like, wow, thanks a lot.
No, I'd say 25 for club age.
Of course.
Take it
Thank
down.
Thank you very much.
Always go down.
So, but Miami, to your point, you know, Miami is a completely different vibe. You know, I called on that market when I was in radio sales. That was my market. It was the days before cell phone. And if you didn't speak Spanish, like, don't get lost because there's nobody there to help you.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, you had to navigate your way through. But there is a completely different vibe. I was watching a documentary the other day just on stress related to work. It was on HBO. It was really, really interesting. One of the interesting things that they said is that the life, you know, the lifespan of white males is decreasing to some extent, but the lifespan of Spanish men is increasing, and part of that is a sense of community. They said it's that sense of community that seems to kind of keep us all together to some extent. But that said, you spent some time in Miami, then you came back here, and then did you end up out in Los Angeles?
Yeah. So after I was in Miami for about a year, and I was just kind of, as I said, doing a lot of club exploration, shall we say?
Yes.
I realized it was time to get my stuff together and be a grown up again. So I came back to New York and ended up working at Spin and Vibe magazine in its heyday.
And what were you doing there?
I headed up marketing. And it was pretty cool because it was the first time that, like, people didn't really know what Coachella was in its infancy back then. And it was really interesting because we were the first media property to have a partnership with Coachella. And we were able to do really innovative stuff, like, way, way back in the day. So, and then after Spin and Vibe, I ended up then getting an incredible position working for Jimmy Iovine at Interscope. And then I moved out to LA for 5 years.
And how was it working for Jimmy?
It was really incredible. I mean, I didn't work directly for him. He was my boss's boss, but he, you know, it was like being with a genius 24/7. The ideas, everything coming out of his mouth was just pure genius, truly.
I got to see a documentary on him not too long ago. And that, again, it was one of those interesting things. He seems like a very humble guy to some extent, but you're right. There's a level of geniusness that seems to come from some people sometimes, even maybe when they don't know it, but it just, you almost have to listen to every word that they're saying because some genius something is going to come out along the way.
It's always going to come out. And I remember, like, it was so great to just kind of bask in his presence. Sometimes it didn't make sense, but it always, to your point, it would always come to making incredible creative sense because he was a really creative man, and that's why he was so great with artists. So I was there for 5 years, and I helped to launch Beats, and I did a lot of work with Beats, like integrating them into music videos and working with Jimmy hand in hand in relation to, you know, getting Beats into the marketplace. And you know, it doesn't sound revolutionary now, but this is like 8 years ago. It was revolutionary to force every single Interscope artist to wear Beats in their music videos, and that's, you know, pure, free, unadulterated marketing right there and then.
Well, and you guys were, in some ways, just to your point, a precursor of that to some extent. And it's all about building brand development. It is funny back then where there probably were people, especially artists, that are probably like, what do I got to do this for? This is Jimmy's thing. And you're like, yeah, it's Jimmy's thing. That's or Dre's thing. That's why you have to do it. Dre, especially, my gosh, the people that you've touched and the stories that you probably know along the way for early brand development, personal brand development, and how being an early precursor of that is what probably changed their lives to some extent and allowed them to have now at this point just some freedom to be able to say yes to things, to say no to some things. Now everybody's building personal brand. And now if you're not doing it, you're missing something somewhere along the way. But it's probably was funny to see some of that or interesting to see some of that along the way. And you were really a part of that.
Yeah. And I also say that I say this often. And I sound like a broken record about it, but it's something that I stand.
Do you say broken record because you're in the music industry?
Broken record. I say this because it is completely, completely accurate and true. And there's no way around it. If it's not an organic, authentic partnership from the start, then the whole thing's going to fall apart. Anyway, kind of harkens back to our previous comment, which is like, if it doesn't work, if you're not happy, if it's not flowing nicely, then it's like anything in life. And same things for partnerships with the artists and brands that, or with agencies. If the artist is kicking and screaming all the way down the altar and they're going to escape in the middle of the night, don't do the deal. Walk away. You know, like, some of the best deals are never done, and you have to know when it just is not a fit. You could be giving away it's going to sound crazy, a huge lucrative deal. Yet if it's not a fit, then you should walk away from it because there'll be something else that is going to fit later on.
And so talk to us about the position that you're in now, because I feel like that the story that you just told is something that you have to think of almost every day in the business that you're in now. So you came back to New York, and how long have you been with Columbia?
So I'm coming up on 3 years at Columbia Records. In between Interscope, I came back to New York and I was at Condé Nast for 2 years, and I headed up their branded content division. So
I only get you for half an hour, but I want to have you back again because I feel like there's 2 hours worth of stuff we could talk about along the way and good stuff. So then you ended up at Columbia, and are you predominantly responsible for artist partnerships?
Yes. So my role is to devise artist partnerships between artists and brands, integration of music into television commercials and digital content. And so it's really a matter of figuring out the best way to do artist matches and brand partnerships that are going to expose and promote an artist. And to your point, the landscape is so fragmented and so cluttered. It's really hard. It's funny, I was talking to a friend of mine at an agency yesterday, and he was asking me, how does music break through? How do people find out about music? I'd love to touch on this for a moment. There's an incredible song that's out right now. It's called Old Town Road by Lil Nas X. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
Okay.
I don't know if you sent me that one. I get some of
your
stuff.
I did send it.
Lil Nas?
Lil Nas X.
Okay.
What's incredible about this track is that it is the only song to chart on the Billboard rap, hip hop, and country chart. It's an incredible story. And then Billboard, there's a whole controversy. People out there, when you hear this,
because of how Billboard is ranking,
Billboard removed it from the country chart. So there's a lot of controversy about it. Meanwhile, the song, there's probably, actually, no, not probably, there are 67 million memes that were created of this song because it's sort of like cowboy and it's rap, it's hip hop meets country.
Yeah.
And when you have something that truly impacts pop culture, there's no limit with what you can do with it.
It's taken on its own life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that again is an interesting part about music, is the fact that it's baked into all of us, and there's something about music that we all need in our life. And when you find something you can relate to, doesn't matter whether you're country or you're
right.
This. I mean, look at Kid Rock. You know, back in the day, I mean, that was one of the first ones who crossed every barrier to some extent. And so it was just, if you were a Kid Rock fan, it didn't matter whether you were country or rock or rap or whatever it was.
I remember when I was a little kid, because I always loved music, and I was always, you know, always really, really focusing on all kinds of music. And I thought to myself when I was like a little kid, I was probably 8, the only artist that gets played on every station is Stevie Wonder. Like, that's what I thought, you know, as a little kid, because I was thinking about it, like, who gets played on rock and on, you know, the rhythm.
Whatever the country station. Yeah, whatever the station is.
Whatever the station is, it was only Stevie Wonder. And I remember thinking about that when I was a little kid.
And that's probably, again, a moment that not only stuck with you, but it's what's helped kind of drive you through this industry. We've got about 10 minutes more, and there's, again, tons that I wanted to try to tackle in this. But I wanted to make sure that we spend some time talking about the business that you're in right now. You know, this show is predominantly built for chief marketing officers and those in the marketing industry, and it gives them a chance to be able to listen in on their drive to work or wherever they're at and just find out more about what's happening in the space. I feel like a CMO is no longer responsible for one or two things. They now need to know everything. And your space was really interesting to me because I think it's something that a lot of CMOs don't even really understand how it works. They know they see it. They may talk to their agency and say, we want a cool track to be associated with our brand, but they don't really know how that works. They don't know who to talk to. And if their agency only has two or three people that they use, we all get lazy sometimes. And maybe there's one or two guys or one or two girls that always give you the stuff that you need. You need to know all of it. And so this, again, hopefully will be a chance for a lot of them to better understand how this works. And so if you are a CMO and you're trying to figure out, how do I license a hot track to some extent? Did that sound old farty for me to say a hot track?
Hot track.
What do you call it? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's how I view it in my head. How do you go about understanding that process, or what's the process for them to be able to find the new artists or those songs that are out there and available?
Yeah, a couple of points on that. One thing I'd love to just bring up in this conversation is that oftentimes I will get the craziest ideas mostly from the brands agencies of how they've already retrofitted ideas as to how to use music and talent and content. And the ideas have nothing to do with anything pertaining to culture or music. And perhaps it works for the brand, and maybe they should look to do that with perhaps influencers like YouTube stars or something like that. But as it relates to, like, you know, music and great content and music that is being signed to Columbia Records, which is the most storied label in the world, it would be much better to sit at the table together with the talent, with some, you know, with me, myself and my creatives, with their creative agency, and, you know, ideate together, because that's how you're going to get the best partnership and the best idea that will resonate with the audience that the brand is trying to resonate with. Oftentimes, you'll get these things that have nothing to do with anything.
And they're just trying to shoehorn.
Yeah, I don't want to give anyone away, but I had a meeting yesterday, and I was like, really? That's your idea? But
I'm not going to say what day yesterday was, yeah, in case anybody was on your calendar.
But, yeah.
It's a lack of knowledge, though, if you think about it. It's them maybe not understanding how the process actually works. There's a trust level, I think, that gets built in there. It's changing, it feels like. You know, I don't remember who it was, but there was a collection of artists that were, you know, utilized to some extent. I'm going to completely forget what the process was. But the one who got the biggest buzz was, you know, was a rap artist that a lot of people at a brand level, maybe to your point, the hottest, you know, person that you want to talk about right now. I hadn't heard that name or I hadn't recognized that name, but building off of their following is what you're looking
100%.
For, not your following.
That's right.
It's almost like an endorsement when you think about radio to some extent. You know, when we work with brands, there's a lot of times where we'll have a jock that will do that endorsement. If we just give them a set script and we say, you have to read this script and don't vary from that script, then we're missing a chance for them to be able to relate it back to their life. And that's what a listener cares about. They care about the thing that they have a passion for. And so maybe, again, as marketers, that's something to kind of think of, whether it's licensing music or using an influencer to any extent, before you complete the cake, find out if there's some extra ingredients in there.
Yeah, and another point to add to that is that music, as you were saying, is the most emotional, evocative piece of content or medium or platform that there is in the world, truly. Everybody remembers their first kiss or their first concert or a summer romance and the music that was the soundtrack to that for you in your life. And brands can really do something quite meaningful with a wonderful piece of music that it doesn't necessarily have to be so plug and play. Music can really, music moves people. It's a universal language. It, you know, everybody can remember, you know, where they were at a particular time. It's the most impactful sense, I guess. They say smell and sound are the most impactful senses that there are. And I think that, you know, if a CMO is listening to this, what I would urge you to do is come to us at the beginning of when you need to launch or rebrand and think about how we can use music to really tell your story in an organic way.
How do they do that if their agency just doesn't, you know, you never want to jump over an agency. You always want to make an agency involved in the process. And so is some of that them maybe just tracking you down at a trade event or how can they actually start that process?
That's a good question. Just they can find me.
They can find Jennifer Frommer on LinkedIn. Jennifer Frommer. That's how I found her.
Or agencies as well. I mean, and I will say, you know, the result, as you know, there's so many different agencies. And now I love how there are like SEO agencies and there are, besides the digital and social, like agencies are becoming all, there's all different formulas for agencies at this juncture. I will say that some of my best work has to date been done with the creative agency. So that, because it's creative to creative. At the same time, if it's a PR agency, sure. Like, we should just start at the beginning of a project. That's how I would phrase it.
And so you talked about music and music being part of the emotional aspect of all of our lives. And so with some of the time that I have left, I'd love to find out more maybe about a couple of people that you might feel like have impacted your life. Who's helped you to become the person that you are?
Who's helped me to become the person I am?
Is that a fair question? Is there some mentors maybe in your life or some people along the way that you feel like have given you good guidance and it's what's allowed you to be as impactful as you are? You know, you're a great speaker out there. And I see you speak at not only a lot of industry causes, but I also see you speak to a lot of women's causes. And you've got a very powerful voice when it comes to that.
I'm going to flip it. And I'm going to say that I learn a lot from my team. So as opposed to learning from mentors or from executives, I learn a lot from the folks that are junior to me. I find that they know things I don't know. They keep me young and fresh and relevant. And I find it's like a flipped mentorship. That's where I get a lot of inspiration from the folks that are on my team.
And is that because they're closest to some extent? And so by learning that those around us really are even closer to the fire, that gives you an opportunity to be able to just stay tied to pop culture.
100%. I really, you know, it's interesting. I never really thought about this before, but I, over the years and in,
did
in
I
my,
hope you think of something
you did.
New today.
Look you at did. This. You changed my, like my head just, my head exploded. I think that in thinking back on most of my, I've always managed teams and I love having younger people around me. And I find that that inspires and invigorates and it keeps me fresh and current. I think it's, I think I learn more from them than from the older folk, shall we say.
And so that, again, is another great point to possibly take away from this. The fact that those around you who may answer to you to some extent may also be, again, that next generation of great ideation. Let's talk about women in marketing with the last few minutes that we have left. I feel like you always have a great voice when it comes to women in marketing. It certainly it shouldn't be a hot topic right now, but it's definitely something that's relevant. It's being more talked about openly, which is good. And maybe to put a little bit of a button on it goes back to your point of the fact that listening to those around you that aren't exactly like you can be extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of us men that are out there need to be thinking about the fact that that's not a homogenized world. Everything shouldn't be exactly the way that we want it. We shouldn't do everything the way we would do it. And so where do you feel like your voice is in that space?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very, very big advocate for women's rights. Obviously, I'm on several boards of women's organizations, and I try to always give back and speak to how, especially in the entertainment industry, it's not been easy. I've been in it, you know, 15 years since I started. And, you know, women executives are still kind of few and far between in the music industry. It's changing. It's shifting. We've been recognized and identified. But I think that it's really important to be able to give women a voice at the table. And it's turning and shifting as we speak.
So a lot of them are working women. A lot of them are moms. They may have kids or they're trying to, again, figure out that work-life balance, something we, whether you're female or male or whatever you are, you're trying to find. What advice do you feel like you can give to some of those women executives, or what's advice that you've been given that you feel like has impacted your life? We were talking earlier about the CMO for iHeart, who I had not met, even though we used their studio. And I think the hashtag was Can Like Sue. Her wife's name is Sue. And I think that was where she said she felt like she had a moment in her life where she realized this work is important, but you also have to take a moment. And her wife's name is Sue. And when they go to Cannes, her wife figures out a way to have fun, mm-hmm. you know. So is there advice that you feel like you can give to women out there who are trying to balance it all?
Yeah, I mean, I think work smart, right? Instead of, I think I used to, I definitely got into the habit of just like being like a hurricane and a tornado and having to do 35 million things at once and answer every email right away and go to every meeting and go to every event. And I mean, I'm still out all the time networking and going to events. But I think you need to be, my advice is be strategic about what you're doing. Don't give it all away. Don't go to the opening of an envelope. Don't engage in every single conversation, meeting, email. Like really just be, take a step back, slow down, and then go back and decide what you want to tackle.
I think you'd also talked about just being present. And one of those things I think is changing for me is sometimes you meet people and I think you have to figure out either how you can help them solve a problem rather than sell them something, or how you can just provide them a hand, even if that doesn't come full circle every time, even if the position that they have isn't one that, you know, I'm going to be able to, they're going to be able to close a piece of business for me, help them. Because if you're helping them solve a problem, whether that's taking a track and sending it to somebody that you know, or whatever that is, it should come full circle.
100%. That's another important part of how I like to live my life in life and in business. Always help anyone who needs help. Right? Because you never know where it's going to go. Someone needs an introduction. Of course, I'll introduce you. Somebody needs me to send something to somebody or meet their daughter or hire an intern. Like anything I can do, I try to always say yes as best I can. Why not? Life is short. Help people.
All right. As we close, what do you love about what's changing in this business? What are you looking forward to most about what's changing?
I love that music is so accessible that you can find. And I love music. I mean, I know that's what I do, but I love it, and it's what I listen to all the time, and I'm constantly scouring, looking for new music and figuring out playlists and DJs and staying current and also finding things that I love. And what I love is how accessible music is, and you can find anything you want anytime.
Well, listen, Jennifer, that was 30 minutes. How did that feel for you?
I loved every minute.
It flew by.
I can't wait to come back.
Jennifer Farmer, SVP of Creative Content, Brand Partnerships, Columbia Records. We should definitely spend a little more time out in California. We should give a shout out to what's our friend over at Adweek that we saw when we were out in California?
Oh, Danny?
Danny.
Danny Wright?
We'll give a little shout out to our good friend Danny Wright, who brought a lot of humor and fun to us when we were out in California.
Sure,
he sure did. Danny, I'm going to send this clip out to you. So
peace.
Thank you, Jennifer, for joining us on the show.
Thanks.
Take us out.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting. But your agency should. UConnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to UConnex today for a free demo. UConnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.